You are listening to Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast, episode number 16. Today, we're talking about stealth infections, mycotoxins, mold toxicity, and their link to chronic diseases. Hey everyone, Astrid here. Welcome to Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for tuning in. The Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast is produced twice a month for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at www.healyounaturally.com/podcasts. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Stitches, Google Alexa Play, and all other major podcast directories. You can also follow me on Twitter at @heal_naturally and on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at @healyounaturally. All links are in the show notes. Now let's get into the show. Hey everyone, today I have a phenomenal guest. Her name is Dr. Jessica Petras, also known as Dr. Jess on Instagram and social media. Dr. Jess is a Western-trained medical doctor who began her journey into healing in 2009 when she graduated from the University of Louisville Internal Medicine Residency Program and began practicing as a hospitalist. She worked in hospitals for 6 years before she felt that patients deserved more than pill for every ill. So she decided to train in functional medicine with Gerson therapy, ozone, herbalism, and regenerative health. Today, Dr. Jess is a well-known herbal formulator, lecturer, and prized health educator. She's passionate about teaching people how to be their own best doctors by educating themselves and urging them to listen to their bodies. Dr. Jess has an upcoming 8-week live education course all on pathogens and environmental toxicities suited for layperson or an experienced practitioner. Welcome to the Heal Your Natural Health and Wellness Podcast, Dr. Jess.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. It's great to have you. All right. So as usual, without further ado, we're just going to jump right in. Dr. Jess, why don't you tell us briefly about your journey into functional medicine and how did you end up focusing on stealth infections, Lyme disease, mold, and all of that good stuff?
Absolutely. So after I graduated from residency, I was really gung-ho about the medical system. I believed everything they taught me. That I was going to be this great doctor that was going to help change healthcare. That it really wasn't, felt like the system gave a pill for every ill and really didn't focus on getting to the root cause of patients' problems. And so I saw a lot of people become addicted to narcotics. A lot of people come into the ER every week and were known by the first name. They never seemed to get the answers they needed. And I really just was disheartened by the whole system. And once I started to realize that food is medicine, I really had a problem with the food in the cafeterias and hospitals. So I just felt like I was contributing to part of the problem. And I was really becoming a disruptive physician at the hospital because I couldn't keep my mouth shut about things.
So okay, that's really a good thing.
Yeah, it was really time for me to leave. So I went ahead and became proactive in what I wanted to do. Instead of just becoming a victim of the system, I decided to get trained in things that I thought were interesting, that I thought would help people. And it ended up leading me to Gerson therapy, which is an alternative way to treat cancer. Mm-hmm. It also led me to ozone and different ways to detox people correctly. It led me to stem cells, eventually in cannabis, and all kinds of alternative measures to help people get to the root cause of why they're in pain or why they have chronic illness. And really that led all the way to mold, candida, Lyme. And just as a side note, when I was in residency, I almost did a fellowship in infectious disease. So oh, wow. Just to let you know, that has always interested me. But then when I met Jason, my boyfriend, 4 months into our relationship, we realized he had some stealth infections, including candida and mold. Mm. And so it became a top priority in healing him. And therefore, you kind of become infatuated with what you can learn. And really, I saw a new perspective too with living with a patient by accident, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. So I got to learn a lot about that patient population, things that a lot of other people would think were crazy. I could explain because here I was living with the patient who was sharing symptoms with me, right? Mm-hmm. He was telling me what was going on. And then I would have to kind of rationalize it with what I knew about the human body or physiology in general. Mm-hmm. Right. So it was, you know, I've always loved infectious disease, but when Jason fell ill and even the conventional system didn't have answers in infectious disease for us, it was more the functional medicine world, which I had already dove headfirst into. And so that just sort of takes you full circle. After that, the Lyme patients just started coming to me.
They know where to go, obviously. So I'm sort of cut you off real quick. I get a lot of questions sometimes when I've shared Candida. Obviously, I haven't worked with anyone, but what are the symptoms of Candida mold? Are they different? Stealth infections, do they differ one from another? Are they pretty similar? Because I think people would want to know about that.
Yeah, they're really similar. They're both, I always call Candida mold's little dirty cousin. It's not quite as virulent and dangerous, but it's still a chronic problem that can be really hidden in the body for most people, especially if it's an insidious slow onset. It's just something people don't, it's so hard to diagnose yourself. And if it's slow over years, you just kind of chalk it up to aging. And it's not always the case. So with Candida, which can hide for years and years in the body, it really, the most sensitive symptom I found are really bad sugar cravings. So basically insatiable, where people, you know, can't, they'll go out to drive 20 miles to go get some candy somewhere, right? Wow. In the middle of the night. So that's really Candida. And also brain fog, joint pains, constipation, lots of those things can be Candida-like symptoms. A lot of these overlap with mold, though. Mold has some very distinct symptoms that Candida doesn't. It has things like you can't hold your urine. You have a lot of urgency and frequency issues because it inhibits a diuretic hormone in the brain, which tells you to pee much more. The other thing mold does is it causes a lot of static shocks on the skin. Candida has the potential to do that too, but not quite as bad as mold does. And then mold really is a multi-system effect on the body. So people will have these, it's almost, they can't get out of bed. They're so exhausted. It's just a more severe version of the symptoms of Candida for the most part.
Gotcha. Yeah. Wow. That's pretty interesting. Yeah. You know, like we've learned, that, you know, one symptoms kind of like there could be interchangeable, but it's always important to dig deeper. Like we, you know, in this realm that we are, we always talk about the root cause. You know, that's also what I've always talked about on my website. You know, you need to find out the root cause. You need to work with someone who will definitely look into, you know, where is this coming from? Not just merely, you know, looking for the symptoms, which usually happens in conventional medicine. That was an excellent response. Thank you. So now we're going to move to the second one. Why don't you tell us about the combination of mold and stress? In one of your posts, you said, you know, mold releases mycotoxins, which are volatile organic compounds, and these are used in chemical warfare. Hence, mold is extremely immunosuppressive and wages an all-out attack systemically on the body. Mold combined with stress is one of the main causes of reactivation of Lyme and Epstein-Barr virus. Remember, root cause answers give results. That was pretty interesting. Why don't you tell us about that?
Sure. So, well, I can say, you know, in this post, I tied stress in with mold. However, stress is so underplayed. It really is the activation or initiating factor for so many different chronic illnesses that where people are kind of teetering on the edge of health, right? Which is a lot of people in today's society, honestly. Everyone's really just teetering on the edge of health or disease right there. And so it doesn't take much in the form of stress for a lot of people to have a downward spiral in their health, if you will, or an unraveling of their health. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's just like a domino effect. You know, things will just start getting diagnosed all in a row after they've had this perfect storm, right? Let's say they moved into a new house that had some water damage that no one knew about. There was some hidden mold behind the walls, which is really root cause. And on top of that, maybe they lost a loved one, miscarriage, if there's all kinds of different scenarios where people, it seems like the perfect storm that kicked off their health journey. And I feel like a lot of us, or most of us, are probably exposed to Lyme disease, especially if it is true that it is sexually transmitted, which there's some controversy about that. But, you know, a lot of people believe that it is. And so if there, if it's true that we'll have between 300 and 400,000 cases, new cases of Lyme diagnosed each year, then, you know, there's a lot of people with spirochetes that don't have active Lyme disease. It's very interesting. So that it seems to be activated almost by a stressor, which is almost like turning the brain on fire, turning the microbiome to a pathobiome. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be a perfect storm to be that initiating factor. Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. You know, I actually learned about the, I think you were the one that posted about the possible, the possibility of transmitting Lyme disease sexually. That is mind blowing. Mm-hmm. What a thought. You know, is what is the latest research on that, mm-hmm. if you will?
Exactly. The you have to think about form follows function. So the syphilis, which is another bacteria, is very closely related to the spirochete. Well, they're both spirochetes, but they're closely related to Borrelia, the bacteria that causes Lyme. And they fall, they were both as a corkscrew shape.
Right.
And so that means they can burrow and hide deep in different organs, hide deep for years, and then reactivate, resurface in a secondary or tertiary form, which is often what tertiary Lyme is when it gets in the central nervous system. So very similar there. So, and you have to think about how syphilis was transmitted, definitely sexually. Mm-hmm. And so we often wonder about Lyme disease too. There's lots of things that really can be transmitted sexually, I feel like.
Wow. That's pretty interesting. Well, guys, that's something else to, you know, keep an eye for, you know, another reason why you should protect yourselves, mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, sexual health. But that's pretty interesting. Thank you so much for, you know, the details on that. So now we're going to move to, I think, one of my favorite questions. And what is Kilbine sweat? You were the pioneer of Kilbine sweat. I've done it myself. You know, I go to the sauna. I didn't get to, unfortunately, to try your amazing products, which everyone's raving about. But I know that you have something. We'll talk about that later. But so Kilbine sweat. Why don't you tell us how did you come up with that, which is brilliant? I remember I used to talk about, you know, detoxing, or what is that, chelation, with, I remember years ago, I actually created a post about that. And I remember I said, you know, cilantro and other, spirulina, but you also want something to grab those heavy metals, otherwise they'll keep circulating in the body. So I was reading about it. I did a little research before I put the post together, and I came up with chlorella. Right? That's one of the things that will grab, you know, bind. And then when you go out, at that time, I didn't do sauna. I was probably going to gym a little bit, but it was not really known about that. So why don't you tell us about Kilbine sweat?
Sure. So I have to say there's lots of other docs like Dr. Kurt Wohler, who works for Great Plains Lab, who they always recommend an antimicrobial, a binder and sweating, or some sort of detox, opening detox pathways like I recommend. But this is my coined phrase for it, if you will. And it happened by accident. Quite frankly, yeah. It was something that someone tagged me in on Instagram, and I was sharing it with the audience, and basically just hashtagged, you know, Kilbine sweat, explaining sort of what that meant. And it just really caught on like wildfire. And so I just have gone with it, you know? So
that was brilliant.
It's really a way it catches people's attention. You want to know what it is, you know, and it's really, that is what it is. What this means is, you know, taking, let's say you suspect a HIV infection, or maybe some heavy metal toxicity, something that all of us, I think, suffer from to some extent, then you would want to look for a really good quality herbal antimicrobial. And some of those ingredients are things like oregano, you know, black walnut hull, garlic, things like that. And really let that digest. If it's a tincture, maybe wait 45 minutes. If it's a pill, an hour. After that, you can take a broad spectrum binder. And the binder, really, it's going to bind up everything, right? So you need to take everything about an hour away from it on either side, at least. And after you take the binder, you want to think about okay, now I'm binding up, killing these things in my body. I'm binding up this conglomerate. I need to make sure that it doesn't get stuck in my body again, that it comes out, right? Mm-hmm. And so many people have problems with their bowels and their bile movement, and especially even their sweat. If you talk to people nowadays, they say they can't sweat and they think it's a good thing. And it's not really a good thing. If you're getting in a sauna, you're running, you know, it's hot. You want to break a sweat within 10, 15 minutes or so,
right?
You know, at the very longest. And really, when people can't sweat, that's a blocked detoxification pathway. And what I've noticed is the sicker the patient, the more blocked those pathways are. And it's like, it's as if these pathogens and heavy metals are blocking out detoxification pathways. So really, I have to work with people to get them consistently getting in a sauna. And I prefer an infrared sauna because it has radiant heat, which heats you up from the inside out. And really, people should be drenched when they get out of there. And if they're not, it doesn't mean that you can't get there. It just means that you need to consistently sit in a sauna to the point where it's tolerable every day, and maybe add a minute or two on every time until you can get to the point where one day you'll get in there and you're pretty drenched pretty quickly. And mm-hmm. that does happen with consistency. And at that point, that's, you're well on your way to feeling better because you're able to release toxins that have been bound up inside your body, and you're facilitating a process where mm-hmm. you're helping your body kill them and you're helping your body release them properly. And binders really help to mop up those toxins. They help people feel better because during the killing process, people really feel awful a lot of times. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It has to, you know, headaches. Beware. Yeah. You want to make sure your detox pathways are open, right? You know, it wouldn't go killing, binding, and sweating if you can't poop every day, or you know you haven't broken a sweat in 5 years. Let's back off and be a little gentle on ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? I actually wanted to touch up on that again. Like I've heard of people, and in fact, myself, I didn't sweat a lot, you know, mm-hmm. a few years ago, and no matter how hard I worked out and like that, and turns out that, if your pathways are blocked, so guys, for those of you that are listening, definitely, follow Dr. Jess, and read her posts, because she talks about this continuously. Your pathways need to be open in order for you to be able to detox. I just wanted to go back to the same kill, bind, sweat. In one of your posts, you mentioned the benefit of the protocol. And I'm thinking, you know, the sauna. So mm-hmm. they talk about cardiovascular health, the benefits of going to a sauna, cardiovascular health, congestive heart failure, cholesterol, hypertension, inflammation, depression, brain function. There's so many benefits. But then I see blood sugar levels. I was reading recently, and I forget, it was one of the journals where they were saying that sauna could have an issue when you're a diabetic or you have sugar imbalances, because of the when your core, you know, gets or the heat, you know. Do you know anything about that in terms of blood sugar
balance? I think it probably just means low blood sugar. So there's more of a risk of people passing out if they have
blood
sugar.
High. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sorry. So more hypoglycemia versus hyperglycemia.
I would assume, but I have no idea.
Yeah, I definitely want to look into that, because I actually myself, I've had issues since forever in terms of like insulin resistance, things like that. I'm always at the gym. I'm a former athlete, but somehow along the lines, because I think lack of sleep, you know, I was always like denied. Yeah, I was always denied owl, and I'm a former web developer. We do a lot of work at night. And I think that finally took a toll. But anyway, let's focus back on the kill, bind, sweat. Actually, we're going to move away from that. The next question is breast implants and root canals. You also had a post, and I think that was pretty interesting to me. Please tell me about their lifespan for most people and how these procedures should be correlated to symptomatology for an accurate diagnosis. I think this is not well known, and I think people would definitely appreciate your input.
So, yeah, I think that anything man-made, really, we've been kind of brainwashed to think that that can last as long as our bodies can. And that's not usually the case for some people. Now, I want to put a little disclaimer out there that says not everyone has problems, but I have seen a lot of my patients have problems with breast implants and root canals. Root canals in general, you know, this is really, you know, they're drilling a hole in the tooth. They're leaving the periodontal ligament intact, which tells the body not to go there to repair any issues. And with some dead necrotic tissue there, there's lots of tubules in the tooth where bacteria can hide. It's microscopic, doesn't need to be that big. And you've told your body not to go there and repair it by leaving the ligament intact. And so root canals really only have about an 8 to 10 year lifespan on them. And a lot of people start to notice hair loss, brain fog, joint pains, head and neck, shoulder issues, lots of chronic pain. And then even eye floaters, spraying embolic bacteria into the bloodstream. This is going to affect you systemically over time. And the same with breast implants. You know, they're made with upwards of 50 different heavy metals, lots of fillers and preservatives, things that don't belong in the human body. And then up to 10% or so have rupture or leak on first implantation. So they're really, you know, just implantation. I don't know if that's just a rough procedure, or if they're that sensitive. If they're that sensitive and people have them for 10 to 20 years plus, you have to imagine, are these things leaching into the bloodstream? Is there a risk for a leak? What causes it? What doesn't? We really don't have those answers. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the FDA is considering putting a black box warning on all implants at this point. They already do have one on silicone. But even the saline implants have silicone outer edges and textures to them. So, you know, there's silicone in all of them, differing amounts. You know, saline are a bit safer. They still have silicone in them, and different fillers and preservatives we don't want that are not natural to the human body. Now, I will say I've met women who have implants for say they have never had a problem. I haven't sat down and ever talked to them about their health issues, nor do I know whether they connected feeling chronic fatigue to their breast implants, right? So it's such a hard subject to quantify and qualify until more objective studies are done. But what I have seen in the general population of women with breast implants is not necessarily positive.
Yeah, no, we're in the field, and you constantly read, you know, new research, you know, it's saying, you know, how the chemicals in there, and there's a possibility that they could rupture with an accident, with, you know, if you are something I was reading, it said, if, for example, if you have an accident where you hit your breasts for whatever reason, even just something minor as playing with the children, they could potentially be some kind of rupture, and then everything is leaching to the body, and we don't want those chemicals. So that's very important. Thank you for definitely touching up on that. Now, the other question is, why don't you tell us, what are the top 5 supplements that you recommend to help the body do its job in detoxing?
That's a good question. Thank you. So I would say, you know, definitely something, a killer in mind there that we've talked about. I think most, you know, I like a quarter of all disease and cancer disease comes from hidden pathogens. Most of them are possessed without knowing it, in my opinion. So I think doing plans, you know, once or twice a year is really important. So a killer in a binder. And always, I must say, none of these supplements are perfect without keeping detox pathways open. They help, but it's up to you to do a lot of that working out, saunaing, you know, making sure you have your guts in good shape and having good bowel movements. On top of the killer in the binder, I would say glutathione. Really, really important for a lot of people, unless they have a mutation called a CBS mutation where they won't process it very well. But glutathione is the master antioxidant in the body.
I'm sort of cut you off, Dr. Jess. How can they find out if they have that mutation? Is there a way to
23andMe?
Gotcha.
And,
thank you.
And then I would say, besides glutathione, probably. You know, I really love some of the supplements for mitochondrial damage, like acetyl L-carnitine that helps with brain function and muscle function as well. And then probably a really good probiotic, super important for most people. I really like ones that are shelf stable. For a lot of people, I really do like a colostrum, or I think we're talking about this next, an IgA immunoglobulin supplement. I do think that's really important too.
Oh, excellent. Well, actually, that ties up with our next question. When you were talking about the IgA, what do you tell us about IgA immunoglobulin and its link to certain conditions such as candida, sinus infections, yeast infections, and all of that good stuff?
Sure. So IgA is the immunoglobulin basically that comes from the breast. It's the first out of breast milk. The first breast milk that comes from the breast that feeds the baby is called colostrum. And that contains a bunch of IgA immunoglobulins or soldier cells that help protect us from hidden infections or problems in the mucous membranes. The mucous membranes basically line a lot of our internal organs, the digestive tract, the lungs, the respiratory system in general, bladder and genitourinary system, reproductive organs, all the way up to our sinuses. And so it's, you know, really important because a lot of hidden infections will hide out in many of those spots, right? So if you don't have enough soldier cells there, immunoglobulins there to see the problem or mount a response, then things will kind of go hidden in your system. And dumping soldier cells in there, like IgG immunoglobulins, which help build the IgA, then that really helps your body respond and maybe mount a response where before it was missing things.
Wow, that's interesting. See, you learn something new every day. So how do you feel about kefir, which is, you know, this is a little bit controversial. I've drank kefir for a long time. And also kombucha and stuff like that. But then I learned recently, so I used to promote kombucha. I've written articles on that, how good it was and stuff like that. But then, like, we're always learning it every day, educating ourselves. I learned that if you have candida or any of those infections, kombucha is not good for you because kombucha is made of yeast. You know, SCOBY is a symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast. So I was like, oh my God, I think when I was drinking kombucha, we're going to get personal here, guys and girls. I developed these kind of like a rash under my armpit, and I never had stuff like that. And it was like a red rash. And at some point it was kind of like raw. And I was like, what is going on? You know, I'm trying to eat healthy, whatever. Turns out that I was making kombucha with black tea. So I started making it with green tea, and that stopped because black tea has more yeast than the green one. I come to find out. Right. But then I also kind of stopped the kombucha because I was doing A/B testing in regards to my, you know, insulin resistance and stuff like that. So how do you feel about that? Because I belong to a group that has like over 70,000 people, Kombucha Nation. And they all talk about, you know, I was fully convinced that kombucha was such an amazing until we learned that candida and things like that. How do you feel about that? Kombucha, kefir, things like that.
You know, kefir is a little bit better. It just depends. It's the industry and what they're doing to us. They're adding sugar to the kombucha, and that's the problem. I think Homa kombucha probably doesn't have quite as much sugar. But yeah, drinking that all day long, fermented stuff like that with added sugar is definitely promoting the yeast. And if you buy it store-bought, it's careful. I mean, a lot of them have upwards of 20 grams of sugar. Or more. And so, and that's not that healthy. I really wouldn't promote that for most people day in and day out. And I know candida and mold is such a problem now just because of how we're living indoors and all the water damage in buildings, the VOCs in general in buildings that make everyone sick. Then really that can add to a problem already with candida. It's kind of feeding the source. So I think it's everyone's different, bio-individual. So each one has their own set of a host of symptoms. Some people can drink kombucha and probably not have a problem.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like she's saying, you know, you gotta, like I did actually, you know, you gotta try to, you know, look at the symptoms. Are you feeling great on it? Are you not? But if you have candida, I was kind of nervous about that because, correct me if I'm wrong, I've read in the past that candida is linked to cancer. And so that kind of petrified me. I was like, many of the patients who have been diagnosed with cancer had candida. So can you kind of like tell me a little bit about that? You know, what you know about it, how can we potentially prevent?
In general, you know, all pathogens, a lot of pathogens, in my opinion, are connected to cancer. I mean, Epstein-Barr is, most definitely CMV, those are viruses, right? There are lots of different pathogens that lead to cancer because they can integrate into our DNA and our genome. And candida in general, absolutely. is linked to different types of inflammation, right? In general, is a problem. If the button for inflammation is stuck in the on position and it never goes off, then that's a risk for our system kind of starting to miscommunicate over time. And then that the immune system is haywire. And then our system, our foundational building blocks that run our body every day don't run in the proper fashion. And that's when we start to get in trouble. And what causes that are things in our system that don't belong there. You know, heavy metals, pathogens just like candida or mold. Mold is a bigger one for causing it, in my opinion. But if mold is there, almost always candida is there, because mold lowers the immune system enough so candida can opportunistically grow. And so really the root cause with persistent candida infections a lot of the times is mold. So definitely both those or either one can lead to cancer because of the inflammation I just mentioned.
Gotcha. Wow. Something to definitely keep in mind, guys. In relation to that, how can our listeners potentially, if they suspect that they have candida overgrowth or mold or stealth infection, when they go to the doctors, I've experienced it myself. I'm not going to generalize, but I've gone to my doctors and it's an uphill battle trying to get certain tests. I'm pretty persistent. And I always say, I need to run this. And if you don't run it, I'm going to go to the other one. What can they ask for if they suspect they have mold, candida, any of these?
Well, first of all, good luck at conventional doctors. They're not going to believe you. They're not going to order anything. So you're sort of barking up the wrong tree. Yeah. It's definitely not the place to go for something like that. Nor is the hospital. So, or the emergency room guys, they don't, unless you have a fungus ball in your lungs, they will laugh at you. So yep. I would recommend a functional doctor, or practitioner. I think a lot of, osteopaths, a lot of chiropractors, a lot of naturopaths, and functional medical doctors in general know about mold and candida, and that there's a gradient to these things. You don't need to have aspergillus fungal balls in your lungs to have aspergillus. You can still have aspergillus. There are gradients to these things, just like they are to candida. They also feel the same way about candida. If it's found in the urine, unless it's found on a pap smear, people don't think it's a problem. And then they just treat it locally, right? They don't treat it systemically because they don't think that's a problem. If it was, you'd have candidial sepsis, which isn't always the case. So there's gradients to this. So if you guys want to know where you stand on hidden infections, you probably need a functional test, which always runs around $300. There are urine kits that are really useful, but you'll need a doctor to order them. And so you got to find a doc that kind of subscribes to the things I'm discussing, right? And agrees that there are other root causes and that a pill just shouldn't be given to treat symptomatology, right? So once you find a doc that subscribes to that theory, then it won't be a problem getting the test that you feel like you need, especially if your symptoms are relevant.
Yeah, definitely. You know, actually, I was kind of putting it nice, but you can have said it better. You know, good luck trying to get this, because conventional medicine doesn't believe in any of this. And if you go and talk about it, like I do on social media, Twitter, you get literally, you know, destroyed, and they call you crack, all kinds of things, because they don't believe in this. But functional medicine is where it's at, you guys. That's where we want to be. All right. So we're going to move to pretty much the final question. Sure. Please share your best tips to maintain our immune system running smoothly, prevent disease, and all of those hidden infections that you talk about. Just tell us.
Yes, yeah, sure. So I think the biggest one, again, that I think isn't talked about enough is handling stress and your emotional load and your thoughts and not spiraling negatively in your mind, which is really, really hard to do these days, because all of our actions and beliefs and everything stem from what you're thinking. So if you can control your thoughts and your emotions, you can help control your stress. I think people would feel a lot better if they were doing breath work, if they're moving their lymph system and with myofascial release, breath work, excuse me, myofascial release, breath work, or, you know, even lymph massages, Epsom salt baths, you know, anything to help your regular elimination tactics stay in tip-top shape properly. That's how you get rid of all these toxins we have every day. So really maintaining a self-care program for people where they're not just working, going all the time. They're actually acting like a human being rather than a human doing. And that's really important. Otherwise, you're imbalanced from the flight or fight or the rest and digest systems. You're imbalanced. You're peaked in the flight or fight. Most people are in general, right? Stress cannot be underplayed. It's the tipping point for hidden infections taking over your body, for heavy metal load causing a problem. It's almost like it's activated with stress. And so if you can control that and keep, and you do that by taking care of yourself, you know, how would a parent soothe a stressed child? You need to talk to yourself that way. You need to let yourself have pleasures in life that you would give a child that's upset. You know, not necessarily a horrible cheat meal, guys, all the time, but, you know, something that's good for you and that feels good. And people need to remember to stop and pause and say, you know, what does my body need right now? Do I need some more vitamin C? Do I need some more vegetables? Do I need a nice bath with candles around me? Do I need a massage? You know, how can I help take care of myself? And I bet if we had self-care routines where we just, especially when it's flu season, guys.
Yeah, that's another thing. And it's like we always talk about, it's like flu season is actually all year round. Like if you boost your immune system all year round, you don't have to be worried about any of that. So that's what I do. Right. I try to do it with my family, right? Just boost your immune system, eat well, take care of yourself. Like don't just, and the same thing goes with like all those, you know, breast cancer awareness, this and that. I've always, I start from like February, you know, and I'm like, just a reminder, don't wait until October to get your, you know, thermography, which is part of, that's a whole other, topic.
That's a whole other podcast, right?
I was vilified on Twitter because of thermography. I got all the, I don't know where they came from, but like a lot of shills, you know how you get people talking about that. It was, it's not, you know, the FDA sent a letter saying how it wasn't, it wasn't safe and so on and so forth. But anyway,
of course.
Anything else you wanted to?
And make sure that you're happy. You know, you're pursuing what your dream is in life. I want people to take a minute, and because life is short, and we're always going and doing, running around like chickens with our heads cut off, and then wondering why we get sick. So it's really a much more simple life than what we've made it out to be.
Beautiful. I like that. And you know, like Dr. Jess was saying before, I wanted to mention this before we close, and I kind of always do. Listen to your bodies, listen to, your symptoms. Are you feeling, you know, I always try to do that. How am I feeling despite everything I'm doing? You know, am I sleeping enough? The body will never lie. And if you abuse your body, when you're young, believe us, it will hand you down the bill later down the road. So definitely sleep. You know, we always talk about, we sound like a broken record. You know, shut off the phone a couple of hours before you go to bed. Use the blue light thingy. Do as much as you can in terms of prevention. Prevention is always better than a diagnosis. So, all right. Very well. Yes, we're definitely getting close to the end. I just wanted to for you to tell our listeners, where can they find you on social media, on your websites, and your latest projects?
So you guys can find me. We're definitely building a new website currently. So it will be drjessmd.com. It's in the works. Right now, I do have a landing page for my educational platform, and the courses are 35% off right now on the pre-sale with code Dr. Jess. So if you guys, I should have the link to that. I guess it's education.drjessicapetros.
Yeah, I'm going to add those links. All of it is going to be in the show notes. So they'll be able to find you on social media everywhere. But the courses are, you said 35% off right now, guys. You do not want to miss it because the courses are amazing. There's so much for you to learn, right?
Yeah, everything from hidden infections to kill bind sweat to what's toxic in your air, home, water, soil, food, even down to coffee enemas and ozone, cannabis. So we have everything, a little bit of everything for everyone.
We do, you know what? That the coffee enemas is going to be another podcast. There is such a controversy in terms of coffee enemas and CBD and all that. So you are cordially invited for the next podcast. already, because it was so much fun. And so guys, again, Dr. Jess, the new website, I'll put the link once it's ready. You send it to me so they could find you eventually. So guys, just to recap, on Instagram, you could find Dr. Jess, DR. JESS.MD, and on YouTube, Dr. Jess Petros. You could just look her up. Also, right now, there's the website is to find her courses, www.education.drjessicapetros.com. Dr. Jess, it was an absolute pleasure to have you. Looking forward to having you again and wishing you the best of luck in your future endeavors.
You too. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.